This episode is brought to you in part by Reliance AI. Reliance AI streamlines privacy, data protection, and AI governance on one platform with advanced AI for live data mapping, processing activity records, and more. Visit reliance.ai, that's R-E-L-Y-A-N-C-E.ai. It's in the code. Welcome back to another episode of Data Protection Gumbo. I'm your host, Demetrius Malbro, and today we have a fantastic show lined up around security advisory for today's investors during political conflicts. There's a lot of that going on. We have a pending election, and we are also going to tap in on how to reduce rising cyber insurance costs. And so that continues to be a theme. Ransomware is still running rampant as well. And so hopefully we can answer all of your questions out there. I have Scott McCrady, who is the CEO of Soul Cyber Managed Security Services, on the show today. Scott, welcome to the Gumbo. How are you?
I'm great, Demetrius. Thanks for the intro and glad to be here.
So first off, explain to the Gumbo listeners what Soul Cyber really is.
Yeah, so if any of your listeners are familiar with managed security services, there's been a tradition about 20 years now of sending data to an MSSP, and then they send you back a bunch of alerts, and then the customer is responsible for triaging those alerts. We've been in the space for, like I said, over 20 years, and what we realized is customers were looking for more. They're looking for better management, so they're looking for, you know, someone to help them manage their underlying technologies. They're definitely looking for the detections, but they're also looking for a lot more response. They want to be able to have a more holistic capability around if there's a problem, how to solve it. And so a lot of customers are responsible for maintaining high level, expensive, instant response capable people in their company. And they would like to move those resources to more strategic activities. So resiliency, DR, fraud, you know, these. They want to move them into things that are kind of hard to do at scale. And so that's really what Soul Cyber is about, is helping organizations sort of have a drop-in security program with the full breadth of capabilities from managing the tech, doing the detections, but also really high levels of response so that organizations can take their expensive resources and focus them on more important tasks.
And before we really jump in as well, what's the actual trend of what you've been seeing lately around conversations that you've been having around those who are looking for managed services within the cybersecurity industry?
Great question there. It's really sort of two different conversations. The first one is what I'd call the traditional conversation. These are sort of your larger or mid-enterprise companies. They're very used to the traditional model, and they're looking for a better mousetrap compared to the MSSP they already have. But when you start that conversation, it's really sort of, I've got my people, just take my data and then send me alerts. The other one is, you know, and maybe we're early to this at Soul Cyber, but the earlier adopters that are saying, it makes no sense. I've built three security programs, you know, in my lifetime as the CISO, having done it three times, it makes zero sense to try to build that whole thing from scratch. The people, the process, the tech, the tooling, like, I would like to outsource the chunky, repeatable middle part to you, Soul Cyber, and then I want to build the components around it that you can't do at scale. Okay. Those, obviously, customers on the second half, we believe that will become very, you'll see a lot more of that going forward. It ties into cyber insurance. Cyber insurance wants all this stuff done in a consistent, repeatable manner anyway. You're going to, I think the winds are blowing towards doing more, not doing less.
And obviously, I'm sure you have had the news on, right? And you've seen some of these different types of high-level outages and things. There's been a lot going on. And it's almost like within the last 5+ years or so, it's like there's one thing after another. And you can't get around what's going on within the news today. And whether we're going into a recession, or there's political unrest, or there's a war going on in the Middle East. I mean, there's quite a bit that's going on right now. So from your perspective, where do we stand as an industry? And I'm talking really the cybersecurity and the managed services industry as a whole.
Sure. I think one of the things that is coming up a lot when conversations with customers is around this level of uncertainty, maybe the right term, but as we sort of pinball, you know, from some level of massive event to another event to another event, as we sort of pinball between these really concerning and high profile events, I think organizations are just getting more nervous about the fact that it's kind of hard to have some level of prediction. And so in this level of uncertainty, I think customers are saying, what can we do about it? And so the uncertainty really revolves around the fact that you have two major conflicts out there. Obviously, one in the Far East in Russia, Ukraine, and you have one a little bit more near in the Middle East. People know intuitively that it's nice that that is contained, however you want to qualify that. But at any point in time, if it becomes uncontained, then you have a bunch of knock-on ramifications. Right. And I think organizations sort of get that. I think, too, the awareness around the knock-on effects of kinetic-type warfare is being realized more. So if you're in the foods, if you're in food chain, if you're in pharmaceuticals, if you're in hospitals, banking, obviously, you have an awareness that you're more critical infrastructure than probably you sort of always knew. It's that whole, like, you sort of always know, but there's something that makes you know it more. And I think we're definitely seeing that in the market, is organizations realizing that, you know, doing something that to them is just a day in and day out activity, like getting food from point A to point B, becomes a significantly more critical activity if, you know, kinetic warfare starts becoming more less contained and more broad-spread. So I think you've got uncertainty there. I think the CrowdStrike situation really put a lot of nervousness in folks, realizing that what they thought was a relatively stable situation became very unstable very quickly. So I think there's a high level of uncertainty about the resilience of the infrastructure and candidly also the processes that go into that. I think, you know, all of us were in a position of saying, how we all know how to do N minus on engines and all these other components. So to see something like that happen caught a lot of us by surprise. And I think organizations are trying to figure that piece out. And then the third piece is this AI component. And so you got this kinetic thing going on out there. You got two of those. You got this sort of, you know, wake call, shot across the bow situation that happened with CrowdStrike and outage. And this third piece around AI is organizations are saying, what do I do there? Like, you know, on one side, it feels like I have to be in the AI game. Otherwise, I may miss something. And all of a sudden, some competitor builds an AI widget that makes my entire company obsolete. On the other side, I think organizations don't necessarily know what to do about it. So I get asked a lot about it. And I think organizations are trying to figure out, it's like, again, the sense of like, there's a major event change, global change, sort of internet-esque level of change, but do they need to be doing something today to sort of get ahead of that from a competitive standpoint? So I think all of that's leading to this just general level of uncertainty in the market that definitely comes up in conversations with customers.
So a lot of uncertainty, and we're definitely seeing uncertainty in the job market, right? So still a lot of layoffs post-COVID, and the numbers are not coming in as people would like. I think it went from 4.1 to 4.3% as far as the number of the jobless, right? That is bringing a certain level of uncertainty as well. And you also mentioned that there are organizations are still trying to figure it out. Now, is cyber insurance, is that one way to maybe have some type of safety? Or it's almost like just having auto insurance, right? You have it, and if you get into an accident, then you happen to call your insurance company and they make you pay your deductible. And sometimes they're like, hey, we can't cover you on this. But I'm hearing different things around cyber insurance, and maybe I need to understand a little better how it works.
Sure. For your audience and listeners out there who aren't familiar with cyber insurance, think of it as essentially two pieces. And I always go back to car insurance because most of us are at least relatively familiar with that. Mm-hmm. The one piece is if you hit somebody, there's a set of insurance that covers that, right? And then there's another set of insurance where if somebody hits you, or, you know, other things are damaged, other property is damaged because of that situation, right? And so cyber insurance works very, very similar, which is, if you are breached, what can be done about it? And then if there's a knock-on effect of that breach to others, to your customers, to third parties, there's coverage there as well. So think of it as sort of two parts of the coverage. The reason why it matters is two things are happening when it comes to cyber insurance. The first one is every year they're sort of increasing the ratchet to put more controls in place in a mandatory sense for customers. And so what used to be a relatively simple questionnaire that organizations could fill out to get cyber insurance has now become, you know, a multi-page, multi-document. Oftentimes they'll send a risk agent to review your organization and sort of see what you have. They'll run scans against your organization. And so it's become a lot more complicated. Also, because there were so many breaches over the last few years, like anything, if you have a lot of it, the price is going to go up. So cyber insurance is something that is wildly needed for organizations because you just never know when something bad's going to happen. The classic quote is, you know, it's not a matter of when, it's if. Or sorry, it's not a matter of if, it's when. Because it's really hard never to be breached. But two, the question is, how do you control the cost? And so one of the things that we have a partnership with the cyber insurance industry where if customers use our solutions, they're all best in breed and best in class. They can get a massive discount. It's about a 40 to 45% discount on their cyber insurance. Wow. A lot of us in the security space are trying to figure out ways to connect those two a little bit more closely because the insurance companies want customers to do what we do for them. And so they're trying to figure out ways to incentivize that. And so one of the people in my company says, you know, the insurance companies are putting their money. And so we're really trying to help companies say, listen, you're spending tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars on cyber insurance. Let's pull that back. And you can then obviously feed that into better security controls.
Is there something different that Gumbo listeners should be doing as we approach this election season? I mean, it's fast approaching. We've had a changing of the guard, so to speak, around Vice President coming now, Kamala Harris, and it's just getting really interesting right now. Is there a different game plan just as we approach the political season around your organization and maybe because I also heard about a breach or some type of hack on the on Trump's side of the house, which just happened a few days ago. And obviously there will be more of these types of things that come up as we get closer and closer and closer to the election.
Yeah, so I don't know if the election, so there's two or three things that traditionally happen around elections. You get a lot of just, you know, pick your term of the day, propaganda, misinformation, disinformation. You've got a lot of that just sort of circling out there. Organizations themselves probably aren't really something that they need to be worried about from unless their brand is caught up in it. So probably not too much there. The second piece then is obviously intergovernmental aspects. So we used to call it elephant stampeding. So way back in the day, governments used to attack governments and then, you know, hackers and organized crime would attack companies. Obviously that's changed significantly over the last 8 or 10 years, especially with China sort of moving the needle on their willingness to go after traditional companies, commercial companies, and take that technology back. So I think the thing that people have to realize is that intellectual property was, there was a massive spike in the attacks on and theft of intellectual property. It sort of lulled a little bit. And as we sort of hit this new bifurcation point in AI and robotics, I think you're going to see, and then the elections obviously impact that depending on who's in office and sort of their position from an international stage. I think organizations have to be very, very, very conscious of the fact that there's three things that the international states want. They want intellectual property around AI. They want intellectual property around robotics. And they want intellectual property around, call it supply chain or blueprints. So the way that you actually build your business and run your business, if you're more effective, more efficient, then they want those. And so, you know, if you're in the tech space, you've got to be aware of it. And if you're in critical infrastructure and you need to broaden your thought around critical infrastructure, you know, water supply, food supply, medical supply, you know, healthcare, energy transmission, all of those things, you really do need to be much more cognizant of your security posture than I would say people have been in the past.
Okay. And are there certain tools that you recommend just around keeping an enterprise, and you primarily deal with what, small, medium-sized businesses, or is that enterprise level?
Sort of mid-market and small enterprise,
So is there one thing that you see that a mid-market organization has that maybe an enterprise company may not have? Because there's a difference between large versus small, and there's also a cybersecurity skills gap when it comes to the number of people that you have actually supporting your environment, trying to strengthen and layer the defense of that particular organization. And I'm sure your team goes in and they recommend certain things. Is there one thing that you typically see organizations struggling at that mid-market level?
Yeah, and I'll hit that from a couple different aspects. Okay. One, I'll get sort of bang for your buck. So organizations really do need to get MFA, multi-factor authentication, enabled across their key tools, their key devices, key systems. It's really critical to get MFA turned on. It's not a silver bullet. MFA session stealing is real. It's not as hard as it used to be, but it is super helpful, super useful. Organizations like ourselves that can detect sort of advanced threats, we can actually use resets and forcing password changes and using the MFA as a way of kicking bad actors out. So that helps us in the response, but it also helps on the detection side. Mm-hmm. What I would say the biggest thing that we're seeing in the mid-market right now is the consistent operations of their security program. And we use best-in-class tooling. We can give tool recommendations to people. But the problem rarely is tooling. It's more the ability just to run the program consistently. And the easiest example I've got, Demetrius, is it's Friday afternoon. It's 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You've had a long week. And in your head, all week long, you've been planning to clean your house, right? You got 2 or 3 hours set aside. And then what happens, right? Your wife hits you up. Your buddy hits you up. They're like, hey, let's go get a margarita and, you know, a steak. And you're just like, oh, okay, let's go do that. And what happens? The house doesn't get cleaned.
Yep.
The biggest problem we see in security, especially in the mid-market, large companies are better about this because they have the resources and they can sort of put people into more specific roles to do this consistent component. And so what we see is that organizations run out of time. Somebody leaves the company. They don't have a backup. They had somebody who's really good at doing this one thing and then they leave, or they're so good, they get pulled into another, you know, department or get assigned to a different project. And so the ability to run a security program, what does that mean? Do you have all the tools that are needed to protect your organization? Not more, not less, but the tools that are needed. Can you run them consistently? Are you updating them? Do you have them in blocking mode, or do you have them in passive mode because you're afraid to put them in blocking mode? Are they patched? Are they deployed to all devices? So we see this a lot. We'll have, even in our customers, we'll be like, hey, it looks like we're seeing devices that don't have the security tools that we've, you know, have for you deployed. And we'll find that they weren't paying attention. You know, are you keeping your admin accounts in check, right? Are you doing Active Directory reviews to make sure that you don't have, you know, leftover accounts sitting in there that are active? You're tracking your service accounts. There's all this little stuff that makes up a security program. And the biggest thing that we see in companies is they think a tool solves a problem. They're like, hey, I bought this new EDR. And they're great, by the way. We use EDR. And they think that solved the problem, not realizing that EDR evasion techniques are super common. And the bad actors are targeting identity more than endpoints. So what can you do? If somebody logs in as Demetrius, but they're not Demetrius, they're now moving around the network as you, they go over and get admin rights or super user rights. Can companies find that? Do they know about it? Can they detect it? Can they respond to it? Well, that's really where we find the biggest problem. It's just the day-to-day operations of running, you know, of keeping your house organized, keeping your company organized. It's the same thing with security programs. Companies just aren't very good about doing that in the mid-market.
Interesting. Sounds about right. And artificial intelligence, are you actually able to be more efficient now? And I'm sure that you guys are leveraging AI and ML, and it's not a new thing, right? It's been around for 10 plus years, and OpenAI and ChatGPT just basically put it on the map, you know, so that everyone now is, oh, you know what, here's this cool tool that we can use for free, or we can pay $20 to kind of get the advanced version of it. And now you have hundreds of AI tools that sprouted overnight. Are you seeing AI as a game changer, and are you recommending those types of toolings as far as being able to help round out the cybersecurity tooling within a company?
Yeah, I do. I think it's a game changer in the way that the internet in, you know, what, late 90s, early 2000s is a sort of a game changer. I think a lot of people sort of knew it was a game changer, but we weren't really sure where. You know, it was like Mark Cuban he did audio.com, right? And he started by streaming college basketball games. And everyone was like, well, isn't that just the radio? They were like, why is like streaming, you know, that big of a deal? There's that famous Bill Gates interview where he was trying to explain the internet to a late night talk show host.
Yeah.
I really do think AI is a game changer, but I think how it gets deployed and how it really moves the needle and changes whatever industry it's in is going to be, is still TBD. For us specifically, there are two major areas that are going to be impacted. One is analytics. And so the ability to analyze lots of data and get better fidelity on the potential outcomes of an attack, that's going to get better. We've been using ML for 15, 20 years in the SIEM and analytics space, but we know that AI is going to make that process better and more effective. Mm-hmm. The second, I guess maybe it's actually three, the second area that is going to impact then is the way then the SOC analysts interact then. So if we can get, you know, fewer false positives and more high potential kills, then mm-hmm. that allows our SOC analysts to be significantly more effective. And I think that leads to the third thing, which is the ability for SOC analysts to say, okay, can you detect and validate? Then the second piece is then how do you remediate? And so if you think about your best SOC analyst, your best response person, they've got a playbook that most of us in our companies, we try to copy those playbooks and run them consistently and then add to them. But they're doing things that are unique because they're on the sort of on the front lines, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think what you're going to see is the AI be able to take their best in class analytics and the response. So they're saying, hey, in this type of situation, these are the three responses that we did. And this is the information that we used. So right now, an analyst has to go to maybe, you know, 6, 7, 8, 10 different locations. What's mm-hmm. the hash? How do we validate the hash? Have we seen the hash before? Can we, now we need to validate if the hash is on other machines. Now, how do we respond to that? Now, did the hash in the way that works, did that allow somebody to get in with identity? Do we have an idea? So maybe you have to go to all these different places. I think what you're going to see is being able to pull that into a response much more quickly. And the analyst will say, hey, block this, do this, and notify that. Then ChatGPT-esque, this is the verbiage. We now put in the incident that explains it. Bang, instance closed, machines cleaned, identities quarantined.
Okay, yeah.
Here's your outcome, and then here's your incident response. Because by the way, analysts don't like writing. And like 9 out of 10, like there's no ever or any with anything, but generally speaking. So, you know, so then bang, right into your incident, ChatGPT it, and then you've now solved this problem and you've gone from maybe taking 20 minutes, maybe that's going to go down to 5 or 7.
Okay, got it. That's pretty insightful. And one final question, I always ask this question, and it's also around, as I mentioned earlier, job market is a little tough, a little challenging right now, especially the tech industry. Number one, are you hiring? Just so our gumbo listeners will know whether or not you're hiring, maybe a shout out to your webpage and kind of what you're looking for if you do have open positions, and also some advice to someone that's out there right now that maybe getting a little disheartened around, you know, it's been a while, you know, 3 months, mm-hmm. 6 months, 9 months, a year that they're still looking and they're unable to find that next spot.
So the first one, we're sort of always hiring. We're just generally speaking, we're still a relatively small company, but mm-hmm. we're always hiring. So soulcyber.com, people can go out and take a look. Usually we're focused on the engineering and sales side.
Okay.
The second piece in for people that are in the market, it's difficult, right? If you've been in the market for a while and it's easy to get frustrated. The recommendations I give to people is I try to be very practical about it. One, easiest job you're going to get is through somebody that you. So obviously you got to do all the work around getting your resume out there, getting your CV out there, getting your LinkedIn, all that stuff. But, you know, try to stay active with your community and your friends and keep asking the question, like, is there something available? You're going to get a better shot at somebody you know. Two, and I think this is a really important one, is when you're presenting yourself, I call it skill stacking. You can call it whatever you want. Mm-hmm. But what is it that most organizations are looking for? They're looking for a problem solver. And they go through this whole process of the job interview. But what they're really looking for, saying, you know, if I hire Scott or Demetrius, is this person just going to solve problems, right? If there's something that isn't documented, isn't known. And so what I think is really important when you're presenting yourself during your interviews, talk about the different skills you have. Hey, you're a great developer. That's great. But can you do architectural work? Are you good at presentations? Are you pretty good at running a program? Are you good at project management? Like, you know, if you're a really, really anal and detailed person, then you want to say it. You say, by the way, I'm amazing at running projects and getting stuff done on time because I tend to have a little bit of an OCD type personality. Some companies love that, right? So don't just necessarily focus on the tangible skill that's being asked about. Rotate in these other things that you happen to be particularly good at so that your interviewer can get a sense of like a capability and the fact that you can come in and help solve some broader problems for them.
Awesome. Great advice. And Scott, I do appreciate all the insight, all the best practices as well. And Soul Cyber, really appreciate what you guys do for the industry as well. And before I let you go, I do want to let the Gumbo listeners know about the Backup and Recovery Professionals Group. And that is a LinkedIn group with over 26,000 professionals in it, specializing in cybersecurity, storage, backup recovery, compliance, disaster recovery, blockchain. I mean, the list goes on. There's lots of smart individuals in that group, and I just happened to run it and created it over a decade ago. So please do check that out. We are also on YouTube as well and dataprotectiongumbo.com. So Scott, thank you so much for being a guest right here on Data Protection Gumbo.
Thanks, Demetrius, for having me. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.